You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome along to Series 6, Episode 19 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. And a little bit like a part-time First Division team, we're working with a bruised squad today, I have to say. I'm on the floor here with hay fever. My co-host Gary Riley, you're recovering from a bout of food poisoning, but we soldier on, the show must go ahead.
Oh, that's it. That's it. It kind of passed there now. I knew the pod was coming on Wednesday, so I said, I've enough bothering done to this fella.
Yeah, as I said, we're a bit like a First Division team. We're taped together and we're not in great shape, but we'll give it a good go all the same. And with a bit of a First Division theme on this week's show, we're going to hear, as I promised last week, we're going to hear from the Cove Ramblers chairman, Bill O'Leary. We're going to start off the show with that interview with Bill very, very shortly, because, of course, Bill and the powers that be at Cove Ramblers, they've appointed Shane Keegan as their new manager. So we're going to get stuck into that in a second, but a lot of the stories we're going to be talking today are coming from the First Division. Big news breaking today. Louis Britton, who announced he was leaving Waterford last night, he's today signed for Cork City, and that's caused quite a stir online, so we'll discuss that. And we actually forgot last week to mention the fact that Waterford, they have a new manager, and since then as well, we've had this whole saga off the pitch as well of, is the club for sale, is the club not for sale going on? So there's a lot of Waterford discussion to be had on the show. We'll look back at the games from Friday and Monday in the First Division. We'll do the same with the Premier Division games, and of course, we'll look ahead to this weekend's matches across both divisions as well. So there's a lot of really good stuff coming up on the show, so stick around for all that. But Gary, as I said, first, we'll head to Cove and we'll talk Shane Keegan. He's back in management. Of course, he was working at Treaty recently as part of the academy there, but back in senior management with Cove Ramblers. Good appointment in your view?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't want to say they're coming from such a low base, but, certainly on the pitch, they're not going the way they wanted to go, and I think a change was required, I suppose. Like, there's been, they've been doing so many good things off the pitch, as we said before, or many podcasts, or attendances are well up since they moved to a Friday night game. That doesn't help Longford Town supporters, of course, but, things like that have helped the club, and the club are going in the right direction off the field. So I think a change was required for on-field matters, and I think Shane Keegan is a good appointment. Like, he has a bit of pedigree in the First Division as well, so I think that'll stand to him. Getting players in from, competing with Cork City and Water. Like, he was with Wexford before and, probably weren't shopping in the exact same window as Waterford, but, you still have to consider how you're getting players down to Wexford and stuff like that. So I think he'll be able to take a lot of experience from his Wexford days into his new job with Cove.
Yeah, and that's something Bill, you'll hear now in a moment from Bill O'Leary, touches on in the interview as well. He said that it's been such a struggle for Cove because obviously they've got someone as big as Cork and Waterford all on their doorstep competing for players. And on top of that, they're so far from Dublin, it's not easy for them. The likes of Longford Town obviously have great success bringing players from Dublin. Cove can't do that just as easily because it's not easy to attract players down on a small budget down to Cove. So they're going to explore other avenues. You're going to hear that now from Bill, and he thinks Shane Keegan's going to be a big part of bringing those players to the football club and bringing future success. So Bill O'Leary, the Cove Ramblers chairman, he joins us now on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, as promised, I'm delighted to be joined on this week's show by the chairman of Cove Ramblers Football Club. That's Bill O'Leary, who's had a very busy couple of weeks, I think it's fair to say. Bill, good to see you.
Hi, Kieran. Lovely to be here. Thanks so much.
So, Bill, obviously, you've appointed Shane Keegan as the new club manager in the last couple of days. We'll come to that in a second, but we'll go back to last week. Obviously, the very difficult decision to part ways with Darren Murphy, who I know was very highly regarded down there. Obviously, had an association, long association with the club as a player and more recently as manager. So, was it just a case of, unfortunately, the results over the last couple of weeks, the decision had to be made?
Yeah, I mean, we came to an agreement. It was mutual in many ways, Kieran. It wasn't not either side was really pushing it. But I think we felt together that really we had taken it as far as we could. And Darren, it was not for the want of trying. He worked extremely hard. Incredible workload he put in and more hours. And he's such a methodical guy and he's such a decent, really, really, really nice guy. And I mean, he was of the opinion too that he, you know, he's done all he could within the current circumstances, and he had, and they would look, if you look back at the performances, we've left points behind us. I mean, every team says that, but I think particularly, and I'm not really speaking biased here now, I think in a very neutral way, I think we've left points behind us, and we've been quite unlucky. But you know, but then the last three or four games, you know, there was a noticeable falling off for whatever reason, and I think, you know, we lost three or four games quite badly, and I think we came to the, you know, and it culminated really in losing 3-0 at home to Wexford. But prior to that, we lost very, very badly 5-2 away that loan, which was really, the consensus was that was an unacceptable performance for the club at every level, and Darren would accept that himself. And so we had to make a change, and look, it's kind of a release for Darren, because I think he, you know, he took control on him too, and it does, you know, it's a difficult task out there, you know, lots of travel and really trying to turn things around, and he tried everything, but look, we wish him the best of luck. He's an ex-player. We're very close, you know, off the pitch, all of us, and we remain good friends, you know.
We defined ourselves talking about Cove Ramblers quite a lot on the show, because I suppose it's difficult for Cove Ramblers in all due respects, because the First Division this year in particular is so competitive with three full-time clubs, and a lot of them are on the doorstep of Cove Ramblers, particularly Cork City. So it was always going to be difficult to compete. I suppose, what was the ambition for the club at the start of the year?
Well, you're dead right, Kieran. It's probably the hardest First Division I can probably ever, right? If you look at it, you've got Cork City, who, you know, are reasonably well financed, and they're, you know, obviously they're big crowds, so they're in a position to maybe fund player acquisition in a good way. You've got Longford that are well backed, and Galway, as we know, are well backed, and Longford are always there and thereabouts, you know, and Jim does a great job up there and getting, you know, financial support for Longford. So, four strong clubs, and then you've the likes of Bray, who go undergoing transition, but Treaty, you know, are still relatively strong, and Wexford has strengthened, and you know, they've played some nice brand of football this year, so got some good players. So it's a very hard First Division, but I think we've underperformed, and I think, you know, if you look at it, I suppose we've invested more in our players this year. We've invested a lot more in our management than we'd hoped that would pay dividends and come to fruition, and at least we'd be a lot more competitive. But we're way off the pace, and it's kind of not, you know, that's not where we want to be. So you know, we need to be into playoffs and above, and I think I accept and others accept we do need to find, you know, investment, you know, to push on again further. We've done lots of great things off the pitch, but really it's a product, right? And you're only defined, and correctly in my opinion, you're only defined by how well you do on the pitch in many ways. You know, it's a football club. The structures need to be right behind the scenes, but that's only part of the equation. So I think going forward, we accept that we do need greater investment into the team. We're working on that, and I think we'll get it. Now, we might not get it to turn things around completely for this year. I don't think things need to be turned around this year, but I think we need to plan properly for next year. But it's a kind of a gross or a significant kind of disappointment to all of us in our centenary year that we've underperformed, Kieran, because there was huge hopes, and we had huge hopes for the management team and the players. And so we're very disappointed, really. Some would argue, maybe should we have changed manager earlier? Should we have, you know, held on to Darren? It's always a flip side. You just don't know. But I think taking away from that, I think, like, to thank Darren and his team for everything they did. I think it's an exciting new journey now with Shane. He's a proven, experienced manager, and we're going to back him, and we're going to go, you know, go hard at this for the remainder of the season and into next year.
Let's move on to the appointment of Shane Keegan. Obviously, he's a man that knows the league inside and out. He's a man that's won promotion from this division with Wexford Youths, who had a very small budget that season. So that must be something that was very attractive in terms of his CV. And when he approached you, or you approached him, it must have been something that was in the back of your mind. And obviously, he's managed at a higher level in the Premier Division with Galway, and he had time at Dundalk as well, where he was involved in all sorts. So he's a man with lots of experience on and off the pitch. So what was it in particular about Shane that made him the standout candidate for Cove?
Yeah, I think I know Shane from, you know, over the years, and I have a good relationship with him, and I often touch base with him on various bits and pieces. I've always found him to be a really lovely guy and very straight down the middle. Loves his stats and analysis, you know, and I don't think it's a case of paralysis by analysis, but it's certainly, he certainly is very focused on you know, using data, using nutrition, sports science, you know, and really trying to gain an edge psychologically and otherwise. So he's very driven, very focused, methodical. Interesting, when we talked last night, you know, he's you know, one of the books or one of the managers that he really admires is, you know, Carlo Ancelotti, which is a bit of a turn up because most people would say Klopp or Guardiola or, you know, and so on. So that gives you the kind of idea of the kind of, I suppose, the kind of thought he gives to the game, that he thinks a little bit differently. But he's certainly a proven guy, right? He's done great things at Wexford with a very low budget. Not that that was the ultimate driving force or decision maker for us. It was the fact that he had, you know, he'd experienced other clubs and he'd managed in the Premier Division, which was a really important part for us too. And he'd managed, you know, he's got a good network on and off the pitch. And I think maybe, right, if I look at it, maybe we suffer a little bit from being, you know, we do, right? We're some of the other First Division teams are either in Dublin or they're close to Dublin. So they have accessibility to players that necessarily we wouldn't have. And that's a challenge for us. So, you know, we have to offer something different, right? And we're making inroads in that space. You know, we've a player or two over from England. We're going to look at that again. Accommodation and money, obviously, is key in every case. But we're looking at that too. But Shane will help mobilise that vision, right, for us. And he'll bring in energy and a kind of an experience. And I think he'll give some of the players a kick up the backside as well, right? So some of them do need it, no doubt about it. They know that they haven't been performing to the level that they should be. There's a personal responsibility on every player to do his very best. And I think the players let themselves down for sure in the performance away to Athlone. Now they corrected course, and it's important that they correct course and they stay on that course, Shane. You know, it's a challenge for them. We have a lot of young players, and we missed that bit of experience and maybe that bit of toughness, right? That bit of real desire to kind of like, almost like a Roy Keane-esque type figure. I know they don't come around very often. We had him in many years ago, but like, you know, that's what we need too. And I think Shane will help identify those players.
Can you tell us, Bill, is it a full-time position or is he working on a part-time basis?
Yeah, so he's working on a part-time basis. So he'll continue with his other non-competing work. So obviously anything that competes with his ability to do the job for Rangers isn't going to continue. But he'll be able to balance things. And I think in the summer months, he does have a lot more time than the winter months. So it's a good time for us to be kicking off with him as well, Kieran.
And look, it hasn't been all negative this season. In terms that we've spoken about a lot on the show, off the field, I think you've had a 100% increase in attendances compared to pre-COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So that's been absolutely fantastic. What have you done to achieve that?
We've been in and around third from bottom, second from bottom in our attendances compared with any club in the First Division. Like, we're averaging 800 or 900. No, it did drop off. It did drop off recently for the Wexford game because we're on a poor run. But 800 or 900 is you know, we were averaging pre COVID maybe 250, you know, to 300. So a huge increase. And I think there's generally a kind of a post COVID bounce in live sport and live event attendances. People kind of need to get out, but I think the community here in Cork and Cove get what we're trying to do. They really do. Lots of goodwill that are there, and I think we need to continue with that. And you know, we've had positive good news stories as well on the Sports Capital Grant and various bits and pieces. Our under-17s ladies team started, and we've plans to go into 19s and grow from there. So we're not going to take our foot off the pedal in any way, Kieran. And you know, financially we're doing pretty well, and we made a small profit last year. We didn't lose money, which was great. And I think our focus is to do the same this year. And, you know, it's sometimes difficult to remain prudent because the easy thing to do sometimes, or not the easy thing, but maybe the rash thing to do sometimes, is try to say, God, let's borrow or let's try to get money and take a punt and things. And I admire some clubs to some extent who've done that and made it work. But many clubs have done it and not made it work. And so it is a risky model, and that's one we're very, very much against, really.
And you said there that there's great goodwill in the community. And I suppose from going down to Cove over the years, maybe that wasn't always there. As you said, there was very small attendances and there was maybe little disagreements and maybe not relationships between local clubs and all the rest. You've obviously worked very, very hard on that.
You've
built up now this great relationship with the local clubs, with the local people. So what have you done to achieve that?
Yeah, I think there's nothing really stands out in terms of one or two single moments. It's just about constant communication, being humble, being open to, you know, different people's opinions, being prepared to kind of compromise, and being respectful as well, right? Being respectful of other clubs' histories, their desires, their motivations and their ambition, and not conflicting with any of that, Kieran, really, right? And also, like, at the end of the day, if we, like, we did the Hofa Football Initiative where we were part of, like, a new, you know, a new initiative where it created a really lovely facility in Cove. That's a start again, and everyone involved in that recognises it as a start. You know, it's the end of the beginning, right, rather than the beginning of the end, and that's the way to look at it. And I think there's a real positive vibe now in Cove Football. There's a real positive vibe in the town. And we just need to continue it. I think it's good. It's a good model, but you've got to protect it too. And I think the personalities involved in Cove Ramblers help make that work. You know, all the people on the board and the volunteers. There's a nice bunch of people there, and they want to make things work for young fellas in the region and for Cove. And we're proud of where we come from, and we want to kind of do well. And we're. It really gets to us, Kieran, that we haven't done well this year. It's really, really frustrating. But that's sport, and you've got to learn, like, you've got to learn to win and learn to lose. And I think it's actually given us greater energy and greater drive to kind of come back for the remainder of the season, next season. Even though, you know, I think the playoffs is certainly beyond our reach this year. But it's not to say that we can't win games and build for next year. Mm.
What has been the discussion with Shane then since he's come into the job in terms of the goal for the remainder of the season? Is it just a bit of a reconnaissance mission now for him to have a look at what's there and get familiar with the young talent, maybe in the underage, and try and blood some of them and build towards next year?
Yeah, interestingly, he said something very noted last night on the press call. He said, "I'd be much more interested in where we are in 12 months rather than like where we are after next Friday's game or maybe where we are after the next two or three games." And that as much as a chairman and as someone who's desperate for quick results, we all want quick results in life and in sport. It does not always happen. So you've got to respect that position. And I think by really supporting Shane and getting behind him in terms of his network, his knowledge, his methodical approach, creating good relationship with him, I think we can really prosper. You know, it might not be this year. It won't be this year, right, that we do well, but it could be next year. And I think we'll work on that. It's not our centenary. It's not to happen in our centenary, but so be it. I think for Shane, certainly we want to be playoffs at least next year and in the Shake Up. You know, we're a club that's been there for 100 years. Okay, we've been only in the Premier Division, you know, on three occasions, I think. But we're a well-known club. We're a well-recognised, you know, hotbed of football. We've created great players over the years, and I think we can come back from this poor season and not lose faith.
We've had a couple of fan questions in for yourself, Bill, since we announced you were going on the show. And the very top question, we got several messages, particularly from fans towards the northern half of the country, Longford Town fans in particular. They want to know, why are Cove not playing on Saturday nights anymore? Because they really missed the away trip.
But yeah,
I suppose, look, the results speak for themselves in terms of the upturn in attendance. Has that been a big positive moving to Friday night for the locals?
Probably, Kieran. And like, I know people love coming down to Cove. Like, it's a lovely vista, it's a lovely harbour. You know, have a weekend away or a night away, and that's an important part of football as well, right? And I think you guys always from Longford bring a nice crew, and I think it's important we respect that. But if I look at it from a family point of view, I think it's nearly easier for guys, you know, to get out, not so much get out, but get the opportunity to go to a game of a Friday night. They're just home from work a weekend, you know, and it's maybe easier to bring, you know, one of the kids and go and have a night out. We're trying to make it an experience. Whereas Saturday night, what we found is that families have been planning things and they're doing bits and pieces in the afternoon or the evening. It's harder to get them together. And we're trying to create that family kind of vibe, that family atmosphere here. And it's working because we're getting far more females through the gate, and we're getting far younger demographic through the gate as well. It's not all middle-aged guys, and that's really important as we grow the game.
Fantastic. And look, just on that, you mentioned they're trying to create the family environment. Unfortunately, we have seen incidents across the league as a whole this year. There has been some incidents of crowd trouble, and I know you had a couple of issues earlier on in the year down there, but it was stamped out very, very early, dealt with very well, and it seems to have you've dealt with it quite well, and it doesn't seem to have reared its head again.
No, it hasn't. And I think that's an outturn again, or an output of COVID. You've got invariably young guys, right? What we found is some of the guys are like in their early teens, which is crazy stuff. But and you'd wonder, there's a parental responsibility here. There's a societal responsibility that parents, you know, control their kids and their teenagers. And that hasn't been happening to the extent that it should happen, really. But we corrected a couple of those. We had one or two incidents. We resolved it pretty quickly. We worked with the FAI, in fairness, and their assessors, and we've worked obviously with a security company. So I was surprised to see it, really, but I think it's a bit of an output of COVID. I think there's a lot of pent-up emotion, and people, especially the teenagers, they lost 2 years of their lives where they couldn't really, you know, experience and enjoy life very much. So maybe there's a kind of a lot of pent-up emotion, but that doesn't excuse it or condone it. And I think, I hope now it's kind of petered away. But you see it across Europe, you know. We've seen it in Holland and the UK and other places. So, but I think the FAI have come up with some good plans, and the clubs have worked together on it, and hopefully we've nipped it in the bud. But
I was just going to ask that, actually. Do you find the clubs are now working together a bit more on that? Because I suppose we don't have the same sort of policing systems, whereas in, say, in the UK, if someone's banned from a stadium, their picture's passed around and there's police spotters on match day. We obviously don't have that here. So we find it a lot in the league where maybe Cove banned somebody, they get on a bus to Longford. There's nothing really to stop them buying a ticket and walking in. So do you find there's more cooperation now, given the rise?
Certainly. And we've had? I mean, certainly. And we've worked with the likes of Cork City and Treaty this year really successfully. And, you know, we had a big, you know, we had 4,500 near approx down for the Cork City game that time. Now we had a little bit of trouble, but we corrected that, and they did help us sort of identify, you know, potential troublemakers. And we were really grateful for that. And, you know, and Treaty have worked with us as well. And so, like, I think that's the way forward, because we don't have the technology. We don't have the policing, as you said. We don't have the funds. But we do have potential troublemakers, and you know that, you know, 5 or 10 troublemakers can cause mayhem and do enormous damage with the power of social media now, and the widespread, you know, the ability to spread news very fast across the country and the world, even, that, you know, 5 or 10 people can cause mayhem and really damage the reputation of the game in this country. So we need to protect it, because we have something special, and I think there's a greater recognition, Kieran, as the months and years go by, that we do have something special. You see great attendances now in the league per se, and especially in Dublin, I mean, Cork City as well. The attendances are fantastic. And I think the only way is up. And I think as an organisation, the FAI, they do recognise that if we get the facilities improved and we can offer a greater kind of an experience, you saw it with rugby, etc., to, you know, that a greater match night experience with proper facilities, you can really develop something really special here.
You mentioned that game against Cork. St. Coleman's was looking fantastic that night, packed to the rafters, brilliant atmosphere. I suppose that's the blueprint for you going forward. That's what you want over the next 12 months, 18 months, the years going forward.
Yeah, and like, that was a fantastic occasion. You know, like, Cork people love their sport, you know, their hurling, their rugby, their soccer, and so on. And like, that was a great occasion, and it was really, really positive energy there. And we mightn't have it very long. Cork are flying, as we know, but we have them in the cup again in a couple of weeks. So, and maybe the cup is one that we have to identify now as potential for us to kind of almost rescue a little bit of our season, as well as maybe kind of start winning some league games and go from there. But we're not going to lose faith. We're going to keep driving on, Kieran, and it'll almost energise us more to kind of deliver for the club. So you're never beaten until you accept you're beaten.
Yeah, well, you give Cork a good fright that night, of course, in Coleman. So that cup tie could be tasty, all right. Look, final question. Tasty. I have to say, I've been very enthused by your positivity and a lot of the answers you've given us. It sounds like that despite Cove having a disappointing season on the pitch, the club seems to be in a really strong position. And one of the other fan questions we received was, have you and the club as a whole thought about your future in the League of Ireland and maybe stepping away from it? But from what you're telling me, it seems that Cove is going from strength to strength. We might not be seeing that just yet on the pitch, but hopefully
it's coming. No, I'd hate to see us step away. I think we're bigger than that. Okay, we have to grow regionally. We know that. Like, we're probably one of the smallest towns, if not the smallest town in the country supporting a League of Ireland club. you know, at senior level. But, you know, but we are living in the biggest county, right? So there's a flip side to it. And I think we are trying to grow regionally. And I think, no, none of us are ever looking at regressing back into kind of like non-League of Ireland football. That would be a retrograde step. We're certainly not going to go there, Kieran. We're going to keep pushing on. And there is people with pockets and deep pockets and money out there who can see what we're trying to do. They like us as individuals, and they are getting more and more enthused as the weeks and months go by to you know, and with the potential of investing in us, right? So we're a co-op club, principally. So that wouldn't be jeopardized by any investment we do get or will get, and we'd be careful on that. But we do recognize we do need investment. There's only so much you can do when you're competing against the guys with the big pockets all the time. You know, if it wasn't all about money, Kieran, we know Burnley would be winning the Premiership and not Manchester City. So money's important. It's not to be all and end all, but it's a big, big factor. So we've got to work in that area too, and we are doing that.
Well, Bill, look, it's been a pleasure speaking to you this afternoon. Unfortunately, I missed out on the trip down to Coleman's a few weeks ago at Longford, but hopefully I'll get down there for the next game, and we'll catch up then. But thanks a million for speaking to us.
Great. We'd love to welcome you down, Kieran, and take care. All the best.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, really enjoyable interview, I have to say. I know I conducted it, so I'm obviously going to say that, but just sometimes when you sit down and do an interview, you get a really good feeling doing it, and I got that feeling with Bill. And obviously, Gary, you know, it's been such a difficult couple of seasons for them, really. They've kind of been out of contention for everything early on in the season, this year and last year as well. There's always that concern, and we did, as you heard in the interview there, get some fan questions in for Bill. Have Cove considered their future in the league at all? So it's great to hear Bill saying, no, we very much want to keep the club moving forward. He said that there was a profit made last year as well. And we obviously touched on the off-field successes they've had this year as well. And now a new manager coming in. So a little bit of buzz around the place again. So despite, you know, it could easily be doom and gloom down there, it seems like the people behind the club are trying to keep a very positive outlook on things, which is fantastic.
100%. And look, you have to throw a brave face on it no matter what position you're in. But like, I think, you know, there are such positive things going on. And as you mentioned, the little buzz of a new manager being appointed as well. I think, you know, there's a bit of unknown there, but certainly a bit of positivity going into this new chapter for the team as well. So, look, I think, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on them. I think it's going to be a longer process. Like, if they can push on a bit now for the rest of the season, maybe they'll be able to bring in a couple of new faces into the team. We know with Shane Keegan's experience and his probably a different set of contacts than before, so there's an opportunity there to improve the thing coming up into the second half of the season. But certainly I think next season is going to be the big test.
And look, I always say it on this show, and I said it toward the end of commentary of the night in the Longford Galway game, the first division so often is the division to watch. There's so much great drama in on and off the pitch, and we've seen that over the course of the week with obviously Shane Keegan going in a Cove, and this situation now that's unfolded at Cork and at Waterford. Mm-hmm. Louis Britton announcing his loan spell was over yesterday at Waterford. He was getting thank you messages from all the Waterford fans. Thanks for your great contribution this season. Best of luck for the future. No less than 24 hours later, Cork City announced him as a new signing. Very quickly, he gets a whole different set of messages online. So what have you made of this signing of Louis Britton at Cork City?
Well, look, I think they're entitled to do it. Like, I'm sure, you know, Britton didn't just walk out the door. Oh, that's me knowing done, lads. Good luck out of Waterford. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure there was a conversation was had with Waterford at the same time. So I'm not sure it's just that simple either, but
as far as I'm aware, I think I'm almost certain he has been released by his parent club in the UK. So I'm sure the opportunity was there for Waterford to keep him. If they felt the option was there. And obviously, you're just starting to wonder now, is this something to do with the fact that it's been suggested the club may be up for sale? Perhaps the owner doesn't want to put the same level of finance in. We've obviously seen Taylor, his loan spell has come to an end as well. He's left Waterford. So that's another player that maybe they had an opportunity to keep on.
we'll wait and see where he goes. But particularly Britain's going to be a huge loss because he's got plenty of goals for them this season. So I just wonder, is that perhaps a sign that the chairman now is looking for a step away?
Well, I think it's hard to know. I think that there's a wider question to be asked there rather than are two lone players going to stay on. You know, is that a real indication that the club is genuinely up for sale? I think most people have kind of determined, though, that it is up for sale.
Yeah.
Would that be fair?
I think it is. Look, whether that's the case or not, that is the presumption, and that's the
general feeling, though.
That's the general consensus is what I'm trying to say out there among League of Ireland fans. It's up to Waterford and up to Richard Forrest to dispel that notion. Yes, I know he released the statement, but I don't think that's gone far enough, really. I thought that the statement as well, you know, you were looking for a good statement there in response if he was trying to dispel any of that. And, you know, the very first line was my club. Now, look, technically it is his club, but I know a lot of people said that just came off in quite poor taste. So I don't think he's handled that very, very well, that situation. And it's obviously disappointing in the first place, as he correctly pointed out, that a leak has occurred.
Yeah, well, like, you're going to get that. When you think of, like, organisations like that, there's a lot of people knocking around and, oh, here's a cheeky WhatsApp message, or, you know, oh, tell this to no one. But, you know, half the time that doesn't work in a lot of cases. So, like, I think it's probably an oversimplification of it that, oh, the club is definitely up for sale. But at the same time, as you said, nothing has come out from Waterford to totally quash that rumour either. So it's up to Waterford now to, you know, probably lay their cards on the table. But I definitely wouldn't be looking into two lone lads leaving as a serious indication of what's to come. But I would.
Well, I suppose they've lost those two players now. Will they be replaced? That might be a greater indication of the ambition of the current owner going forward.
Yeah, but like, he also just installed a new manager, hasn't he?
He has installed a new manager, yeah. That's another subject we'll probably move on to now. I think a lot of the Water fans were very, very happy with the job the caretaker boss has done. But I think maybe there's been a suggestion they didn't have the correct badges. So if that's the case, then I suppose Richard Forrest's hands were tied and he had to appoint a manager. And I think the two lads that were in there on an interim basis, they've stayed around behind the scenes. So maybe there's nothing more to it than that. But it's just difficult to know where Waterford are going in this moment of time, because on the pitch they're in fantastic form, 8 wins in a row. But you know, this will be a frustrating couple of days for their fans. I think it's to see someone like Louis Britton leaving and then signing for one of their title rivals.
Yeah, certainly. But I don't think he could have got some, oh, for want of a better phrase, a patsy to come in with badges to stand there. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's been done, not saying that anybody's a patsy, but do you know what I mean? Like, there's been people installed with badges when they don't run the first team. He could have done something like that. I know the FAI aren't keen on that anymore, considering the grief that it caused in years past. But at the same time, you know, bringing Danny Searle or Searle or Searle was brought in from the UK. So, I think that's probably more of an indication of the commitment to the team and the club rather than two lone lads leaving.
We'll wait and see. But you'll remember my comments at the very start of the year when I predicted Waterford for the title. I said Waterford will either win the league or they'll implode off the pitch. It's going to be one or the other. So they're doing okay on the pitch. I think they're back in the title mix. I just hope they're not going to implode off the field. But obviously fans of Cork and Galway will hope that they do. But let's look at the results from the last couple of nights in the First Division. We had games on Friday, so we'll just run through those quickly and then look at the Monday games in a bit more depth maybe. Cork, they were winners of the Cork Derby by a 2-0 against Cove. Maybe not as convincing as you would have expected, but they got the job done. Wexford beat Longford Town by 2-1, and two Longford men here will sit here and hold their hands up and say Wexford were fully deserving of that result. It was a really poor display from Longford, but a really good display from Wexford. I thought their winning goal in particular was a lovely flowing team move. Galway 0, Treaty 0. So Galway there allowing Cork City back to the top of the table on Friday night with that result, only a draw against Treaty. Waterford, they were 1-0 winners against Bray. Again, you might have expected a more convincing scoreline given the contrast and form of the two sides, but Waterford pick up another 3 points and move closer to the top two. Then on Monday night, Waterford, they got plenty of goals down in that loan. Second time this season they've beaten Athlone 5-2. Longford, one of their, I thought it was their best performance of the season, a great response to that poor showing against Wexford. They played Galway off the park and beat them by 2-0, a double from Christian McGerson. And I seen he was in the papers today doing an interview. So that's a fantastic story, as we all know. Bray 2, Wexford 2, Bray were 2-0 up, and a late own goal gave Wexford a share of the points there.
Did you see that own goal?
I did, yeah. You have to feel sorry for the lad, I think.
Oh, yeah, but like, you have to feel sorry for him, but pure comical stuff. Like, it looks like something of a compilation on YouTube. Like,
yeah, well, look, it fits in nicely with Bray's season, I'm afraid. But look, we'll come back to that in a minute. And finally, it's amazing how Treaty fall in this fixture. They've been beaten 3-0, 4-0, and now 5-0 by Cork City this season. So Galway losing in Longford, Cork winning 5-0. Cork move further clear at the top.
Yeah, solid performance from Cork again. Like, it doesn't seem like Treaty have been very hard to beat. Like, Longford Town saw them, you know, I think it was a 3 draws or 2 draws, whatever it was.
2 draws, yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like the, I don't want to say anti-football, but, you know, containment process that Treaty take on in games against teams above them just seem to be working better against Longford than Cork. Like, Cork have been hammering goals in all season, but, you know, 5-0 at home is not pretty, and, you know, shouldn't really be happening at all. But
it's a great couple of days for Cork now. They've got 2 wins, back-to-back wins there against Cove in the derby. Then they put 5 past Treaty. Dylan McGlade came off the bench in this game. He's back in action. That's fantastic for them as well. And obviously the signing of Louis Britton now. So everything is coming up Cork City at the moment.
Oh, certainly is. You kind of have to hang your hat on them to win out the division. I don't see, you know, looking at that Galway performance on Monday, like, it was completely, you know, really
flat.
Well, flat. That's a disservice to flat.
You would have thought Longford Town were the full time team.
Oh, exactly. And challenging for the title. Like, yeah. I don't want to say, like, was it really a blip? No, not really. Like that's the second time Galway.
I'll maintain that those tactics John Caulfield employs, they're going to come up short from time to time. I think you've said it before. That's not a style of play. That's really, really ancient stuff there. Like, hoofing the ball along without any direction. I thought Conor McCormick had a good game in the midfield. I kind of felt a little bit sorry for him being on the losing side, because he did his job well. You know, he was so often the last line of defence, making last-minute interceptions and clearing crosses away for corners and all the rest. So he did his job well in the midfield. But Hurley alongside him, McCormick and Hurley, they haven't got the legs that Longford Town had in the middle. Longford had Carl Chambers, Robinson, and kind of power was dropping in there as well. They had Ryan Graydon out on the wing making runs. Lots of energy in the team. They just they wanted it more than Galway on the night. They were first to every ball, first to every tackle. They ran rings around Galway in the midfield. That's too static of a midfield for me. But, you know, any time they got it, it was just a floated ball up to the edge of the area, which was easily defended at times. Wawerau's hold-up play was good, but when he got it, he had very little support or very little options. So it was, you know, tactically, it was a shambles of a performance from Galway.
Yeah, it was very poor. Now, you're dead right with Wawerau. I thought his hold-up play was very good, but I think he found it very hard to turn. And there wasn't much availability in the middle. Now, it did happen on occasion, but a lot of the ball that he got had to be fed back to the...
Yeah, he was either running sideways or been funneled backwards. So
exactly. So, and that was good defending from Longford Town.
Yeah,
Had him well marshalled, but I think it was, you know, one of the few opportunities that Galway had, or one of the few good ideas they had on the night. And it was just well taken care of by Longford, and it meant that Galway had no really other opportunities. Like, when you look at it, Luke Dennison had to make a good one-on-one save.
Ben McCarthy.
Really good little turn around the corner from him, but Luke was down on top of him. And then McCormick had another shot. Had a shot from about 35 yards.
That was it from a Galway point of view. Whereas Longford hit the crossbar, they probably could have had a penalty. If Longford came away 4 or 5 nil winners the other night, it wouldn't have been an injustice at all. That's how bad Galway were and how good Longford were on the night. So look, I think me and you are on the same wavelength here. We've had huge reservations about John Caulfield for the last, you know, not just this season, but last season as well. I don't think Galway will win the First Division under John Caulfield. I don't think they'll get promoted out with the First Division under John Caulfield. So I make Cork City favourites. That leaves Waterford in the race then. Can Waterford push Cork City?
I don't see why not. Like, it really it depends on what goes on outside of it.
That's the concern.
If that, next thing you know, if that club is sold or there's some row, and next thing you know, you hear something that we don't want to hear. And before I say it, there is no indication that this is going to happen. I just want to make that very clear. Mm. But we've seen things like this in the past where, the wages weren't paid. Or there's jibber jabber and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying that that's true or that's going to happen. But, like, you know, you've seen things like this go on where there's a change of ownership in the middle of a season and it can get a bit ropey and there's a bit of unsureness around the place that can cause, that can leak into on-field matters. And now, as you even as you highlighted at the start, like, are the two lone lads going to be replaced?
Mm.
That's a bit early to say. The window hasn't opened yet, but...
And even when, if bigger clubs come sniffing for someone like Phoenix Patterson, are they going to keep a hold of him?
Well, that's the other thing.
Mm.
So next thing you know, it's Waterford looking, right, never mind challenging Cork. It's can we stay in the bloody thing at all, stay in the playoff positions at all?
Because you look at Cork, I mean, there's been question marks over early on the season. We said if Murphy got off to a flyer and scoring lots of goals, would an English club come in for him? Now, he probably hasn't had as good of a season as maybe hoped. So he's still a very important player for them. He'll be there for the rest of the season. This talk over Barry Coffey seems to have died down a little bit. So I wonder, is he going to stay put? But either way, they haven't, you know, been thinking, oh, are we going to lose this player? What's going to happen? They've gone and done their business and gone out and got a very important player in Louis Britton. So off the field, that's a club that's clearly been run in the correct manner. Now, look, Cork have had plenty of issues off the field down the years as well. But at this moment in time, things are going very, very right for Cork City. And you'd just be worried that maybe Waterford aren't being run with the same type of thinking at the moment.
Yeah, there's definitely, we highlighted already the statement and the league and this and that and the new manager coming in, and it's all just a bit helter-skelter at the minute.
Mm.
I think no news about Waterford now except how their results in the next little while would do the world of good, maybe a couple of signings that people might get a bit excited about. But really, as you said, holding on to players like Phoenix Patterson is going to be huge.
Mm.
And that's going to really, you know, we can really look at their title challenges. I suppose it's too early to say, you know, can Waterford gather it up to come back and, you know, challenge properly? I think it's probably a bit early to say based on the transfer window that's open next week or the next few days.
And just a final word on the First Division now before we move on to the Premier Division games. We'll look at that battle for that final playoff place. Treaty are just clinging on by the skin of their teeth. They're only there on goal difference. Wexford and Treaty now both on 24 points. And Wexford climbed above Treaty. They're level on 24 points and they're 3 goals better off. So it's been a very, very good weekend for Wexford. The win over Longford that maybe not too many would have expected. And then a come-from-behind point against Bray Wanderers, who we'll quickly touch on before we move on as well. But just from Wexford and their point of view, you know, that we said they needed a quick start after the summer break. They had that draw with the Treaty. We thought that was a good starting point for them to go on and build on that. And that's exactly what they've done.
Exactly, yeah. Like even getting out of jail against Bray on Monday was a great result as well, because it just keeps the thing moving. Do you know what I mean? It's not a loss on your card that you have to not contend with, but like deal with as well. So not losing is always a positive, particularly when you're, you know, in a bit of a battle to get the last playoff spot. Do you know what I mean? But I think that win against Longford was, as bad as it was for Longford, it was bigger again for Wexford. You know, they really, not that they really needed that, but it really probably pushed them further along their, you know, challenge for that last playoff spot a bit earlier than they thought. So I think it was like, you know, they haven't lost in the last 5 and they're due to play at Lone this week. So, you know, you can't really ask for more with a run of fixtures like that.
And just on Bray, obviously a defeat against Waterford. Now look, it was only 1-0, but the performance, I believe, was quite poor. And then they're 2-0 against Wexford, and the manner in which they throw the game away is absolutely shocking. And look, unfortunately, again, it was a game where off the field was a talking point, because we saw that disgraceful incident where some idiot standing outside of the ground, this must be a first for League of Ireland, someone standing outside of the Carlisles has managed to launch a smoke bomb over the roof of the stand out onto the pitch. It narrowly misses Joe Manley, could have caused serious injury to him. So the game had to be halted there. So this the off-field incidents that have kind of dragged their club's name through the mud all season, they're continuing there. So Bray, they've got serious problems on their hand. But we'll just start with the on-field stuff for the moment. A disastrous 3 points to throw away.
Yeah, it really was. I think, 10 minutes left, they were 2-0 up. Uncomfortable enough. So, look, it's really... look, the story of their season, you know, they're going nowhere fast. Like, they've won three
wins in 20.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's not...
Only the bottom two have won less.
Yeah, well, that makes sense enough, I suppose. But, like, there's real, you know, malaise around the club at the minute on on-field matters.
That's another thing that I've seen a lot of supporters saying the other night, that the atmosphere at the game on Monday. Now, look, I know Monday games can be like that, but in fairness, the Longford game the other night was a fantastic atmosphere.
Yeah.
It lashed in rain, but the young supporters stood out in the rain and getting behind their team in the right manner, which unfortunately isn't something we can say about that section of scumbags, let's call them what they are, at Bray, that are destroying that club's name and affecting the league's name as well. But yeah, there was I've seen a lot of people saying that it was a real dead atmosphere there on Monday night. So everything that's going on around that club at the moment, it's sucking the life out of the genuine supporters there, I think.
Well, it only would, like, you know, if you're going there and you're seeing this type of character at your games and, you know, damaging your club's name, it's going to be very difficult to separate those two if you don't believe the club is doing enough to rectify it and protect its reputation.
I suppose there wasn't much, in fairness, they could do about the incident the other night.
But at the same time, why you know, that doesn't happen anywhere else. Like, you could go outside Pat's or probably go outside Bowes if you had a big enough arm on you to launch a flare over. Like, I think what must be said, like, these are just scumbags, as you said, it is probably the right way to put it. But also, these are criminal acts. You know what I mean? Like, this is,
and I've seen people online saying, "Oh, this is because of all the stuff going on at the club." You know, frustrations. That's bullshit. Let's call it out. You cannot excuse this behavior. This behavior is totally unacceptable. As you said, that's a criminal act. Joe Manley, if he was hit on the head with that the other night, could have been seriously injured.
Yeah, exactly.
This is no laughing matter. This has nothing to do with football. This has nothing to do with the way Bray Wanderers has been run at a football club. As a football club, there can't be excuses made for this. And the people that are making excuses for these people, they're contributing to it.
Yeah, absolutely. They're enabling this type of behaviour, you know, on a regular basis. No, not enabling it, but, like, you know, if you're tolerating it at all, and, you know, one of the sayings I hate, if you're not with us, you're against us, or if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Like, that's one of the densest thoughts someone, a person could have. There's no nuance there. But, like, I think this type of stuff is very basic. You know, what happened in Longford a few weeks ago with the Bray fans, and then what happened with at the Wexford game last week, on Monday. Like, these are just savages acting like savages, and there's no excuse in it whatsoever. And I'm not really sure, like, even you saw Bray, you know, they handed them they replaced a number of their seats in the support of Pride and stuff like that, and that's great to see. But I think, I'm not saying they shouldn't be doing stuff like that, but there's a huge issue with their club at the minute around their fan base. And, like, even there's plenty of reports about calling, you know, the PA lad going on about Cabo and,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's not helping the situation.
No.
And it really needs a good root and branch resolution to be put in there, where we need to improve our processes and professionalism around how we handled the club.
Well, there was they had the fans forum the other night. Now look, it was only, as I said, 30 people that was able to attend it, and I spoke to one or two that were at it, and they came away quite disappointed. Really, they didn't get what they had hoped for. So, as you said, I think there needs to be a real review of the situation there, because it's clear this takeover has been an absolute disaster from day one.
Yeah, it certainly has. Like, and you know, I don't think there's too many people that would be. That can say it's been a success. Do you know what I mean? Like, who can, you know, stand over it and go, this has been great for Bray Wanderers Football Club? I don't really think so. You know, there's been, you know, a large number of players that came in, you know, that sort of 40 players in a preseason game or something like that. You know, that's like crazy stuff. I don't think that any club does be trying that type of crack. And then, you know, different things going on at games. You know, we were witness to it as well. You know, rubbish, like. And, you know, it's just not helping the profile of Bray Wanderers. Because they were never... were they ever great? Did they ever have a great profile? Like, I thought their social media was good at times. And then, you know, their online presence is a bit odd at other times, let's say. And... you know, it seems like they've leaned into the odd side rather than the...
But one thing I will say about Bray before the takeover, the Carlisle, it was one of the grounds I really enjoyed going to, because it was where I always found...
Oh, it's always freezing.
It was always freezing, but you always got the friendliest of welcomes. The stewards were all really friendly. Anyone you spoke to, if you're up in the press box, they couldn't look after you better enough. And I don't get that same vibe when I go there now. So I think that's a shame. And I think a lot of people are saying the same, that people that go every week to Bray, they're not enjoying it the way they used to. So again, that's something for the club to look into. Why is this, you know, what's causing this feeling among people? There needs to be a full review.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree. But like, if the people that are standing over at the minute are reviewing it, but you know, what could change? I think it needs, even as I was saying last week about their graphics and stuff like that, get some young fella in who's mad about it. Lads like that around the place that are involved or interested in Bray, want to do more. There's lads like that at every club. Just let them do it. See what they can do. Get them involved. You'll probably have a volunteer and his brother for forever. And that's the type of stuff. But like, it's also those stories that are positive stories that you want to hear the club getting involved with. So, look, I think there's a lot of things that need to be done at Bray, but I think the fan and the fan issues, but also the fan experience at the Carlisle needs to be improved as well.
We'll move on to the Premier Division results again. Let's take a look at Friday's first. There's only one game Monday, I suppose, so we haven't got too much extra ground to cover. But it's been a good weekend for Shamrock Rovers, hasn't it, Gaz? 1-0 win at the derby against Bowes, and then they win another derby on Monday night against St Pat's by 2-1. So we'll start with Shamrock Rovers. Great weekend for them.
Yeah, look, you know, I think you said it after that loss against Strada, they go on and win their next 10 in a row or something. But they didn't do that. They lost.
No, they've lost two since then, haven't they? Or, well, they lost to Dundalk.
They only lost to Dundalk, wasn't it?
Only lost to Dundalk, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so in a quite a poor performance, it must be said. But at the same time, they've followed that up with a Dublin derby that I fully expected them to win. And, you know, another game I expected them to win against St. Pat's. Like, I don't rate St. Pat's at the minute at all. So,
just on the Pat's game very quickly, fantastic, fantastic goal from Aaron Green, but that defending is absolutely pathetic. I think you've seen the same clip that I have. It's from the Camac side of the ground. It's a fan that records it.
No, it's from the opposite side.
Sorry.
The camera side.
It's fan footage anyway. It's not LOI TV camera. So it's kind of pitch level. You can see everything up close. The defending is a joke. You wouldn't see that at five-a-side.
Oh, God. You'd be digging the lad out that did that.
Yeah.
You know, that let that happen. Like, it was, you know, and there's probably three or four players.
There's a few of them. Yeah, there's not one person there. There's a few of them just getting shoved aside like ragdolls.
And even the keeper does nothing either. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was a pathetic attempt at defending.
Look, you know my feelings on the Pats goalkeeper this season. I don't rate him.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure I'd be fully in agreement with that. Like, I just think it was just lazy. Lazy from every Pats player on the pitch, you know, for that goal. I don't think anyone was, you know, I've said it a couple of times, Neil Warnock, you have to die to win 3 points, and there was no lad dying on Monday, do you know, and that just wasn't good enough, and particularly with how the Pats game, I know I'm mixing and matching here, but I'll get on to Bulls in a minute. The way Pats capitulated up in Donegal the previous Friday, like that, this is, though the result on Monday is 10 times worse. I know it's against the league leaders, but to cough up a 2-goal lead with what, 10 minutes left, 15 minutes left in the game against Harps, that's unforgivable, particularly with the, you know, the ropey type of performances that Pats have been putting in. Like, they're fourth on the table, but they lost 8 games.
Yeah. And the first goal that Harps get is pathetic defending again from St. Pat's. It's a free kick. Now, it's a lovely ball in from McNamee. I think it's McWoods then that takes it down. He's either trying to pass it or shoot or take it down. I don't know, but he ends up taking it down anyway. So we'll call it a great touch. And then he passes it across, and it's a tap in for, I can't remember who taps the ball into the net in the end, but there's 3 or 4 Harps players that just run in a straight line, and the Pats defense push out, and all 3 or 4 Harps players are onside. So it didn't matter who put the ball in the net. Every single one of them were onside. To defend like that with 10 minutes to go against a team like Harps, who you know are living and waiting for set piece opportunities. My God, come on. You need to have a look at yourself there, Pats.
Sorry, the Pats or Harps first goal on Friday was in the 88th minute.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we talked many times about Bulls this season and their game management. A lot of people were making a lot of comments about Tim Clancy and the four subs he made. Yeah. In this game. Like, I'm not really sure how deeply you can look at that. You're 2-0 up away from home against a, you know, second from bottom team. But at the same time, Lord God, you can't be coughing up 2 goals in the last 10 minutes, one deep into injury time. And even if you look at that goal from Boyle, like, he just wanted that more than any man on the planet.
Yeah.
He went through, lads, to get his nut on that. So, you know, you can't deny the desire from Harps at the same time. But on the Friday night game for Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, people were saying, no, I wasn't watching this game. I actually watched.
You were Jerry, at UCD and you were watching.
I was at UCD. I was watching the town stream as well. Mm. I was flicking it, but was it a fair comment to make that Bowes had plenty of chances? There's a lot of people saying that. Or I think was that just wishful thinking?
I was watching this one at work. I had the town game on in the background, but I was more so watching this one, to be honest.
What?
Yeah, well, it's just because, you know, I was working. I had to be professional. And this was the game that we were doing a bit of in-play on. So I was watching this one. A lot of people said it was a very exciting game. I didn't think it was, to be honest. I thought it was a typical derby. Great atmosphere and all the rest. But I thought Rovers probably just did enough in the game. I know people are saying Bowes had lots of chances. In the first 20 minutes, Bowes were a far, far better team. And they didn't get a goal when they needed to build on being the superior team in the game. They didn't take that advantage, and I always felt then that they probably weren't going to win the game as a result. They had their big spell in the game. They didn't take whatever chances or didn't, you know, the pressure they were creating didn't result in a goal. And it's really poor defending from Bowes to give away the goal they do. They switch off from a set piece, Gaffney at the back post, tapping it in. So again, look, it's just one of the, it's just Bowes, isn't it? You know, everyone talking about how positive and great effort and everything, but they lose the game. That's the difference between these two football clubs at the moment. Rovers don't play well, they find a way to win. Bowes, they find a way to lose.
Yeah, and they're very good at that. Like, you know, there's so much talk about Malin's flick, you know, in the reverse of this, you know, a few months ago. I was just like, oh my God, what a flick. Yeah, but no points, lads. Nothing. Came away with nothing. You know, a clip of a flick. Wow. No one cares. You know what I mean? Like, it's that type of mentality, I think, that has it set in, I suppose. I don't, like, satisfied with, well, I'm not saying that they're satisfied with losing the Dublin Derby, but at the same time, there doesn't seem to be much progress on the pitch to say otherwise. Like,
They're six now,
but
they're, what are they? They're 6 points off fourth. They're 11 points off third. So that ship has sailed, probably. So
yeah, it has.
You know, it's going to take a cup win realistically to get into Europe. Are Bowes going to win the cup? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Now, to be fair, you know, things happen in the cup. They could get a nice draw. I don't know who they're playing.
They're playing Harps. That's not
oh,
easy.
Oh Lord! Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah,
away the Harps.
Away the Harps on Harps. The wear that blue shirt. But
I mean, another couple of defeats. I'm surprised he's not under more pressure. And I feel like I'm coming on here every week and saying managers are under pressure. I think Tim Clancy should be under pressure for the results over the last while. And the football isn't great. I think after the last couple of games, he has to be under pressure now, Clancy. But Long in particular, there was a little spell maybe a couple of months ago where we seemed to be thinking that pressure was coming, but it hasn't. And I know he's built up an awful lot of goodwill in the bank. And even financially, you know, that run in Europe last year and selling on players and all the rest, I'm sure that's done... You know, that's built up a lot of brownie points in the boardroom. And of course, he's done a fantastic job up until this season, really. But, you know, the table doesn't lie. And Bowes are exactly where they deserve to be this season.
Yeah, they are. They're conceding plenty of goals. They're not scoring enough. You know, it's proper mid-table, you know, abyss. Like, you know, I don't really see them pushing up much further in the table. Yeah, I just don't see it happening for them this season. I would have expected Long to be under far more pressure, to be quite honest. But I think, as you said, he has built up so much goodwill in the bank.
But I mean, if they go out with the cup early, let's say they go out to Harps, and whoever Pat's in fourth at the moment, Pat's get themselves together and start winning a few games. Next thing, the gap is 10 points. Bowl season is over in the summer. It's over.
Well, it's arguably over already.
Yeah, unless, as we said, they can get a run in the cup or pray that they get into that fourth spot and that someone else wins the cup and they get Europe. That's what they're relying on at this moment in time.
That's a lot of hope there, you know, and hope and prayers and all the rest of it. I don't see that happening, to be quite honest. You know, John Russell has gone into Sligo there. Surely, you know, there might be a bit of a reaction there.
One second.
We will, but
we'll wrap up on Bowes here quickly.
Yeah, look, I just don't know. I think their season is kind of done and dusted for the minute, and kind of keep the thing going and get a couple of wins. And, you know, I don't think they'll challenge for anywhere near Europe. And I think they'll probably in for an early bat in the cup as well.
You were at UCD Derry, as you said. It was a 1-0 win for Derry. Was there a bit of a contentious nature about the penalty, no? Did I hear that? I did hear Rory Higgins saying he thought they could have had a couple of other ones as well. So,
There was one where McGonagall horsed himself onto the ground. Never a penalty, I thought. I think McGonagall had he had a yellow card at that point. He could have been shown the line, to be quite honest. But you know, I think the referee probably bottled it. And it probably would have been. You know, probably was a tough one, so I'll be fair to the ref. But, you know, I thought Derry were quite poor, to be quite honest. You know, they were doing a lot of huffing and puffing, creating potentially all right chances, but not really. I think McGonagall had a couple of chances that he just took way too long on, or just couldn't capitalize at all. So there's a lot of, you know, I was coming away from that quite disappointed with Derry. I thought, right, they have an opportunity here to, you know, get a few goals in, you know, loosen the chains a bit for after a horrendous run without a win for so long. How can we, you know, go a bit mad here and batter in a few goals? But they didn't take that opportunity at all. And I thought UCD, chances for them in the game to possibly get an equaliser, but it just didn't materialise.
And look, this was a UCD without Whelan and Kerrigan. Be wrong of me not to ask you about your man, Liam Kerrigan. He's off to Serie B. What do you make of that move, first of all? And secondly, as I said, this was one of the first chances we've had to look at this new UCD team without their two stars. It'd be unfortunately the last time we ever see those two play together.
UCD.
Yeah, but how from watching them the other night with the team they have at the moment, can they still compete to stay in this division? So a two-pronged question for you there, Gary Riley.
What was the first part again?
Liam Kerrigan, tell me about his move to Serie B. What's your feelings?
Well, look, to be quite honest, I don't know very much about Como 1907 or whatever it is. You'll have to forgive me, I can't say it in Italian. But I think it's an interesting one. Like, first of all, like, it's kind of mad to see that, you know, there's a club in Serie B looking at players around Ireland. I don't think they've spent too much time in Serie A.
I've never heard of them really. So
yeah, no, I have heard of them before. I think there was a player that we'd all know that played with them. Don't ask me what his name is. I just can't think of his name. But like, I just think, you know, it must have been right for him to make that decision to go there. I'm sure there was other opportunities, but you know, there was a bit of like, oh, jeez, why is he going there? But like, if you know, Dagenham and Redbridge come in for Kerrigan, you know, League Two or whatever, you know, Rochdale and Diamonds or some other, you know, not nothing club, but you know what I mean, you know, some club in the abyss in the pyramid in England, would we be going, oh, that's a great move, you know, you could get, you know, go up the leagues or whatever? Not necessarily. So I think there's it's good to see that players are going further afield. We saw it with a banker going to Udinese, or going to,
yeah, no, it's this weekend he's flying out, so best of luck to him.
Oh, very good. Did you book the flights for him, did you? But you know what I mean? Like, I think there's opportunity there, you know, for players to experience a different style of football. You know, we talk
England will always be there. You know, if it doesn't work out in Italy, it's still on your CV that you've played in Europe. I'm sure you'd still interest a lower league club in England. So England will always be there. I think, you know, as fans in this country, unfortunately, a lot of people are conditioned to think England is the be-all and end-all. That's the way our players have thought for so many decades. But it's finally starting to turn, and young players are starting to look to Europe. European clubs, as you said, are looking to the League of Ireland. I think you're spot on. It's mad to think that a Serie B team has took note of a player that was in the first division last season. And now maybe the fact he's played for the Irish 21s had a big part to play in it as well. But I'd imagine they've done their homework and they've watched him play for UCD as well. So I think it's fantastic, and let's hope it works out for him. But second part of that question, can they survive? Can they compete without their two big men for the rest of the season?
Look, I don't want to look too much into that game on Friday, but if Friday is all I can base it on, then 100% yes. That's probably more into how
poor Derry were.
Poor Derry were, to be quite honest. I thought they were, I don't want to say inept, but like doing a lot of work to get nowhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were very
similar to the game we watched, I suppose, the last time those two teams played. But
yeah, but I thought in that game, you know, there was an inevitability about Derry winning that game.
Yeah, they hit the woodwork a few times and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't as much of that here. I thought Derry were, you know, blunt, you know, not in a good way. They'd no crisp passing. They just weren't at the races at all. And yeah, just not good enough against the league's bottom side, I think.
We'll move on. I don't think either of us surprised by this result at all. Draw it a nil, Sligo nil.
Yeah, I think, did I call that last week?
You called a draw. I think you called a 1-1 draw. And I had gone for a Sligo win. I don't know why I did that. New manager bounce. But as I said, I don't think either of us were surprised this ended in a draw.
No, certainly not. I think, you know, I go back to what Kevin Doherty has been saying, you know, staying games, you know, they're fighting for their lives.
I'll tell you, there was no staying in this game about Drogheda. Drogheda were the team, if either side deserved 3 points, it was Drogheda. They were the one that created some really good chances. Sligo created little to nothing in the game. Drogheda had a few chances, didn't take them. So, again, Ryan Brennan with a really impressive display, by the way. Dean Williams was looking good too, but if anyone deserved to win it, it was Drogheda.
Yeah, well, look, that makes sense. I think the way they approach games seems to be more within their means, you know, staying in games, chancing teams later in the later parts of games. You know, they've dug out draws late on in recent weeks as well. So I think that's a key element to them staying in the division and keeping away from Harps in the ninth spot. But look, a decent result for Drogheda. It's another point on the board. That's what they need to keep doing. But I think a game like this kind of shows the job that's on for John Russell. He has to make a good few changes in that.
Look, I aired my reservations last week about that appointment. I think they needed to get someone that was outside of the environment of Liam Buckley, because I think it's gone stale there at Sligo. This was a fairly stale performance. Look, I'm not judging the manager yet after two games in, but as you said, he's got a big, big job on his hands to try and turn things around and try and improve the mentality within that Sligo team, because they should be winning games like this. We'll move on. Shells nil, Dundalk nil. And again, if there was one team that deserved it, it was Dundalk. They probably didn't create as many clear-cut chances as they liked, but they had enough to win the game. I think Robbie Benton in particular missed a really good chance early on. Shells, again, didn't create anything of note, really. They were the side that was just, as you've pointed out so many times before, when you've watched them live, well-organised and really professional in their approach. But Damien Duff even said after the game, they were just lacking that little bit in attack going forward. So, look, July is just around the corner now, so hopefully they can get a striker or two in there. But it's Dundalk here that'll be the side more disappointed, definitely.
Oh, certainly. But I think, you know, we've been talking about the July window and the attacking requirements that Shelburne have. So I think Duff highlighting that isn't really a surprise. You know, they're lighting us up front. So I think they need reinforcements in that area sooner rather than later. But with, you know, with Shelburne, we talked before about their home form being not great this season. So a good draw at home to Dundalk, it would have won like what, 4, 5, 6 in the bounce or something like that.
This is the second time this season they've held them at Tolkien to a point.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, like, you can, if you look part in the early part of the season, to be fair, Dundalk were drawing with everybody, but it seems like a good thing that, you know, Shelburne have kind of turned around their home form. Not hugely, they're still quite low, but at the same time, they've won the last few at home and then a draw on top of that against the team second in the table. There's nothing wrong with that at all. So if they can keep going like that, Shelburne, they'll be happy enough for the rest of the season. But I think you watched all of the Dundalk Rovers game a couple of weeks ago.
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that while Dundalk were the better team, they didn't have too many clear-cut chances.
Yeah, look, I've seen an awful lot of Dundalk this season, and a lot of the games have been like that.
I know they're second in the table, but like, surely that's the concern. Like, that type of tonic won't last you too long.
No.
Are you getting anybody in, or are you hearing any rumours?
I did see a rumour today online that Patrick Hooban might have picked up an injury that will keep him out for maybe 2 or 3 weeks minimum. So if that's the case, then that's a major concern for them, because they obviously haven't used David McMillan too much this season, and John Martin's been more of a bit part player off the bench. So are they going to put faith in one of those and give them a run and hope they can step up to the plate, or are they going to look to bring someone in? And they've obviously still got this situation with a few lone players that they're trying to nail them down for the rest of the season. So is that distracting them maybe, and they're not able to look at bringing players in, that's taken up a lot of their energy? So, yeah, look, it'll be an interesting window for Dundalk, but I definitely do think they need a little bit more creativity in the team. It was very evident earlier on the season when they lost Robbie Benson there for a spell. They really suffered in the midfield. They're a far better team with Benson when he's there. So, again, can they get some reinforcements in there, that if Benson is out, that they have, you know, significant cover? The two wide players obviously have been probably one of their best players this season, in Bradley and Kelly. So the fact that games have been tight, they've often been the players that have been able to be the difference and come up with something on the night. So can they find another player that can do that from them from the midfield, or another striker in there? Yeah, it's a good question, Gary. Look, we've covered the other two games, Harps 2, Pats 2, and the Monday night game, Pats 1, Rovers 2. So that brings us nicely into the prediction section of the show. And we'll start with the Premier Division games. And we'll start with Bowes against Derry.
Yeah, I think it's hard to... This is one of the tougher ones, I believe, because, you know, you've one team... Well, sorry, you have two teams kind of at nothing lately. You know, Bowes on the back of another Dublin derby defeat. You know, they lost recently against Pats as well. I know the odd one in between with against Shelburne, but I think it's just a nothing season for Bohemians. It's the way it's turning out, and unfortunately, if Derry don't turn it around, I think they're going to be going the same direction after such early hope. Do you know what I mean? Not trying to say that Derry season is going to be all doom and gloom coming third, but I think for this one, I'm going to go 1-1. I think
I've already got a wrote down.
Good one. It's going to be a very basic story. If Bowes go one up, it'll be 1-1.
It's two teams.
Probably yeah, good the way it's going to be.
It's two teams that are probably lacking in confidence a little bit at the moment, even though Derry are so much higher up the league. They're not playing with the same fluency they were earlier in the year. So there is obviously, for some reason, there a lack of confidence. So I'm going to go 1-1. I do just want to point out, though, on Bowes again, and I tweeted this the other night, despite the fact they lost against Rovers, I was so impressed again with Promise Amashere. I think they've got a real player on their hands there. It's interesting to see Keith Long playing him out on the left of the front three, though, or out on the right of the front three, and playing Junior through the middle at the moment. Mm. Now, I know he can use his pace out there, and he does drift into the centre at times, but I would like to see him as close to the goals as possible every occasion he gets, because I think he's just impossible to defend. So I'd like to get Bowes fans' opinions on that, just the way he's been used at the moment. But I mean, he's a great talent, and I can see him going far in the game. We'll move on. Pats against Drogheda. So this is the Tim Clancy derby. And I tell you, if he doesn't win this one, he mightn't see too many more Tim Clancy derbies.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I think there's you know, he's kind of invited a lot of pressure onto himself for this game. You know, we saw a few weeks ago, you know, the huffed and puff against UCD. You know, they took a lot of beating, and that's, you know, UCD, like, not fantastic stuff. I think it all took an old dribbler of a deflected goal and a penalty to get them across the line. So I can't really have too much confidence in them. I'm going to go with another 1-1 here. do you know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to go 1-0 Pats.
Why have you changed your mind all of a sudden?
I just think the pressure is going to be too much. In a good way for Pats. I think they're just going to have to do something here to get it over the line. 1-0 Pats.
Right, I go, the risk. I'm going 1-1. We'll move on to Dundalk UCD. I'll go first on this one so you can't accuse me of stealing your scoreline. And I'm going to keep it short and sweet on this one. I think it's going to be 1-0. I know a lot of people here will be looking at this and saying Dundalk against UCD, Dundalk should score 2 or 3. But we've touched on it already. Dundalk, they're not creating huge chunks of chances. And I think UCD might make it a little bit difficult for them. So I'm going to go 1-0 Dundalk, but I fully expect them to get the 3 points. I'm obviously not going out on a limb there, but 1-0 maybe is a prediction that will surprise a few. So let's hear what you have to say on this one. A man that's seen probably much more UCD this season than I have.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to agree with you that it's going to be a low scoring one, just because, you know, you've mentioned those things about Dundalk. So I'm going to go 2-0. Dundalk.
As long as Dundalk don't get a very early goal in the game, I'd be happy enough that UCD won't get tonked here. But, you know, if they were to score after 2 or 3 minutes, then you'd obviously be concerned. But I'll go 1-0, you go 2-0. I think that's a fair set of predictions there. Harps against Rovers. Is this a difficult one, or are Rovers just going to have too much class?
I think Rovers are going to have too much class. I think their, you know, Terminator-type ability that I mentioned last week is too great. You know, they're on a real high at the minute. Dublin derby, you know, that wonder, is it a wonder goal or? Yeah, it's a very good. There was two very good goals scored by Rovers on Monday. To be fair, no, they were invited in and made the tea and everything by by the Pats defense. So, you know, it's easy to score wonder goals when you're not being challenged whatsoever. But I do believe that, you know, I think Rovers just have, as I said, the Terminator-like ability to just grind you down and put you down in the end. So, I'm gonna go. I'm going to go 2-1 Rovers here.
Yeah, I've gone for the same as well. We'll move on to Sligo against Shelburne. And look, this is a fixture that I got burnt with quite badly earlier on the season. You remember when Shelburne were in really poor form earlier on the year. They went down to Sligo and I had a nice little, I think, threefold or fourfold running on the night. I had Sligo down to beat Shells. And I might have even only had them down to just even win or draw. And they lost to Shells on the night down in Sligo. And that was a result that did real harm to Liam Buckley. And so this is a fixture I've had a bit of bad luck in this year. So I'm going to go with a 0-0 here for this one. Sligo showed in Drogheda that they're just not really, they still haven't got a great pattern of play about them. They're still playing quite a conservative style of football. And Shell's so well organised, particularly when they go on the road. So I can't see too many goals here. I can't see any goals. I'm going 0-0.
Yeah, I actually have it down the same simply because, you know, the window isn't coming in time for this game. Do you know what I mean? I don't think, even if they do manage to sign someone and get them registered and everything, will they be able to make that much of an impact? You know, I don't believe so. So I'm going to go 0-0 as well here. And that's quite an indictment on Sligo as well. You know, the fact that they can't, you know, they're not scoring enough. I don't think they're creating enough chances either. But even, you know, especially for Russell New and that in that team, I'd be going all out to win games, you know, get the fans back on side. Not that they're against the team or anything like that or the club, but you want that positivity of winning a few games in a short space of time and the boost that that gives you and the players as well. It sets you up for success. So I don't think that has been really found just yet by Russell. So I'm going to go 0-0 here as well.
We'll move on to the first division games. Wexford against Athlone.
I think we're going to have to look at it one way only here. Wexford are on a high. I don't think they've lost in the last little while. I think they're on a 5-game non-losing streak, which is quite pleasant for them. But yeah, I think it's going to be just more of the same. I think it's going to be not going to be as high scoring or anything like that. I'm going to go 2-0 Wexford.
Yeah, I had 2-0 wrote down, but you know what? I'm going to go with a different scoreline because I don't have the same one as you again. And plus, Athlone have scored lots of goals this season, but they're losing games. You know, even to get 2 tonight against Waterford, despite defending so poorly, it does suggest that, you know, they've still got that bit of attack and threat. And a man that actually gave us a follow on Twitter today, Thomas Alua, I thought he was very good again in the game for the second goal. You know, the game's dead and buried, but he's still chasing down balls into the corner and he forces kind
of... He's having a great season.
He's having a great season. I said it before. I really think Longford Town should be looking to sign a player like him. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have a prediction here for Alua to get them on the score sheet. So I'll go 3-1 to Wexford. I think Wexford are in flying form at the moment, playing really good stuff. So I think they'll put Athlone to the sword here, but I'll have Athlone down for a goal. We'll go 3-1. Since me and you...
And Alua to score.
Well, yeah. If I get Alua to score, I'm not going to give myself a bonus point because he's the only man scoring for them.
But we'll
go 3-1. What I was going to say, we've had quite a few similar predictions in the Premier Division. And since we've had a little bit of a Cove Ramblers theme show tonight, we'll go double bubble here on this next game. And it's a difficult one to call as well. Cove Ramblers against Treaty. Give me your thoughts on that one. Double points on the line here.
I'm going to go 1-1. I think it's important for Shane Keegan to get a somewhat positive result
against his former club as well. Nice little subplot.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that he spent too long there or anything like that, but
no, he was in the academy as well. So
yeah.
I think it's important to get a good positive result at home in your first managerial bout for the new club. I think, particularly against a team that aren't running fantastic either, like Treaty haven't been battering anybody. You know what I mean? They haven't scored a good few goals, but their goal difference isn't fantastic either. Now, I know that hasn't been helped by playing Cork three times already this season. So I think they've just conceded 12 against Cork alone so far this year. So, you know, to be fair, you know, I can't see either team wanting... I don't see either team wanting to win it enough that they'll risk losing. So I'm going to go 1-1 draw.
Well, yeah, look, I suppose Cove have nothing to lose, really. I think Shane Keegan will come in there, lots of energy, lots of enthusiasm. Let's go out and try and win this against a team that have got thumped on Monday night. And yeah. I noticed as well, I think it was the game on Monday. But I think Jack Brady wasn't playing the other night, was he? But maybe was he injured? I think it was Conor Winder was in goals for Treaty, if I'm not wrong.
All right, okay, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, just on commentary, I know I was watching back the highlights there earlier on, and the keeper didn't have a good night at all. It was the Cork game. Yeah, it was Conor Winder that was in goals. I'm not sure was Brady injured or what the situation was.
He was on the bench.
Yeah, so that's a strange one there, because Brady's had a fantastic season for them. Two games against Longford, he got them points alone. And as well, sources here tell us that Joe Gorman is leaving the club on the 1st of July. So that's another loss at the back. Whatever our thoughts on Joe Gorman and some of his comments about Longford Town since he's left, you know, he came on in one of the games when I don't think he was fully fit, and he was absolutely fantastic, wasn't he? So he's a very good defender at this level, so they're going to lose him. And I pointed out at the very start of the season, I thought losing Anto O'Donnell to injury was an absolutely huge blow for them as well. So yeah, you could argue that their squad is actually weaker than it was at the start of the year, maybe even at times last year. Enda Curran as well has been in and out with injury. So, you know, this is a really difficult period. I think it's a big test of Tommy Barrett's management, but he's shown us, you know, even during his time at Limerick when he was in the most difficult of situations, he was always able to pick the players back up and go again. But I think just with the fact Keegan's coming in for this one, hoping maybe might be a good crowd, Munster derby, bit of enthusiasm about Cove, I think they might surprise a few here. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Cove Ramblers.
I'm not sure. You know, I don't think, like, did they have the personnel to do that?
We see it all the time, don't we? New manager effect. They're at home here, as I said, hopefully a big crowd. But just with those few issues Cove have, Treaty have going on, I think they could be vulnerable here. But I think it's a really interesting game to keep an eye on Friday night.
Yeah, no, certainly it's definitely an interesting one, just particularly with the background, as you said. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think Treaty are going to be, you know, a bit sore after that thumping that they took at the weekend against... or on Monday against Cork. I don't think they're going to want to go down to Cove and just take it again in any way, shape or form. So no, I'll stick with my 1-1.
We'll move on to Bray against Cork. The last time Cork went to the Carlisle ground, they put 6 past Bray. And as we touched on earlier in the show, everything seems to be coming up Cork City at the moment. Dylan McGlade back to fitness. Louis Britton now signed up. I'd imagine he'll be available for this one. And results as good as they possibly could be. So is there only one way we can look here?
I think probably
just to call in, I think this is a real, if ever there was a game of a contrast of two clubs, one club where everything's going great at the moment on and off the pitch, and one team where everything has gone wrong this year.
I think that's gonna just fall onto the pitch, to be quite honest. Yeah, I can't really see any other way around it, to be straight. Like, the way Cork are going on, they're muttering along lovely, and they're getting little boosts all the time. You mentioned Dylan Bedade coming back as well. Like, no disrespect to Dylan, but they haven't missed him.
No.
Do you know what I mean? They're battering teams left, right, and centre. They're top of the division. They've only lost once this season, and that.
But what an option now to have, because I'd imagine he's not going to walk back into the starting 11, because as you said, they haven't missed him, plus the fact it's going to take him probably a few weeks to build his fitness back up. But this is the sort of game where you could see, you know, Bray putting in a real dogged backs to the wall performance. It's 0-0, 1-1 with 10 minutes to go. You bring McGlade off the bench and he pings one in the top bins from 25 yards. You know, that's a great option to have now again. So he could be just coming back in the nick of time.
Yeah, 100%, but I don't see them relying on that in this game or needing to rely on that. I think they're going to have this game well sewn up.
I'm actually different. I don't know why. I think it might be tight. I don't know. I just, Bray, whatever about them lately, they have, you know, they've been picking up these old scrappy draws here and there. I know against maybe that's against, yeah, I know that's probably against some of the lesser sides, but they can from time to time turn in the performance. Even they went down to Waterford and only lost 1-0. Now they probably should have lost by more. No, Waterford had a few goals disallowed for offside and all the rest. I think Cork will win this. Shocked if they don't, but I'm going to go 2-1. Don't think it'd just be a steamrolling job this time around, but if they do go and win 4 or 5, you couldn't be surprised either. But I'll give Bray a bit of benefit of the doubt here. I'll go 2-1 to Cork City.
Fair enough. I think I'm just going to go for a 2-0 win to Cork City. I'm not sure Bray will be able to get...
Yeah, I have no idea how Bray are going to score a goal. I don't know why I've gone 2-1. I just think it's going to be tight. There's a few predictions I'm looking back at here now, and I'm like, Jesus, why did I do that? So this could be a pivotal weekend in the predictions league. You just slightly outscored me last week. You got 8 points, I got 7. So I'm still ahead, but you've made some little gains there. So I'm hoping you're not going to make too many gains this weekend. Look, final game we're going to discuss, and I think this is the game of the weekend in the first division. It's Galway against Waterford.
Yeah, huge one here. There's a huge case for Waterford. Now, of course, they lost Britain.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a huge disappointment for them. But I think the way Galway performed on Monday against Longford, after, you know, a nil-all draw at home, you know, I think it's going to be a very, very tough one for Galway, considering they're just the way they've kind of played of late. It's not going well. Not that it's not going well, I think that's a bit strong. Like you know, the loss before the break. Look,
Gary, we know what the goal is at Galway this season, promotion. If it doesn't come, we've discussed what might and probably should happen. So it's going okay for them. They're in the mix, but they need to be getting out of this division this season. And that performance against Longford the other night, it's not the first time we've watched Galway and we've said to ourselves, they're not going to get out of the division playing football like this. So, you know, as well as it might be going, I'm not sure they're going to meet their ultimate goal this year. This is a great test for them now, this game against Waterford. How they bounce back against a good side.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, you know, they've lost a few 3 times this year, twice against Longford, once against Cork. Like, it's not, you know, it's not awful, but like, you know, they should be beating every other team around them. Do you know what I mean? And anyone below. So yeah, I think it's just not. I have no confidence in them. But I don't think I've ever had confidence in them, to be quite fair. You know, outside of the predictions league, I don't see them winning the league this season. I also don't see them getting out of the playoffs.
I think I said this to you the other night. I'm praying from a Longford Town point of view that Waterford can win this and can get form going towards the end of the season, get up to second in that league. Because that would have Waterford second playing fifth and third playing fourth. So Longford playing Galway in the playoffs. I think Longford, every chance of beating Galway in the playoffs, judging on the three games this season that they've played. They've won two. They've lost a game that shouldn't have lost against them. But I think Longford can beat Galway in the playoffs, just like they did a few years ago en route to promotion. At this moment in time, I don't think Longford would beat Waterford, but who knows what shape Waterford will be in come the playoffs. But, you know, to get over that first hurdle, I think Longford, every chance of beating Galway. So... look, but that's a long way down the line. My prediction for this game is 1-1. If it was in the RSC, I'd probably be a little more confident about Waterford. But I said this to a few Blues fans today when I was chatting to them on social media. I said, you know, I'm fully expecting Waterford to get a result here. So there's every chance they can win it, but I'll play it a little bit safe. I'll go with a 1-1 draw. But there's no reason they should be leaving without points here if Galway perform anything like they did the other night.
Yeah, you see, I don't think it's going to be that handy for them to turn around that type of performance that they had on Monday. And, you know, Waterford coming to town, which are again a different animal, they'd be licking their lips and going, we have these lads. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think I said 1-1, didn't I? Sorry.
Did you? You're saying 1-1 as well?
I am saying 1-1 here.
Jesus, a real week of 1-1 predictions.
Yeah, but like I think there's a lot of difficult games this
there is,
week in
yeah,
particular.
There is.
You know, and a lot of stories going around in the background as well. You know, there's pressure, we'll say. Not pressure, but, you know, Shane Keegan doesn't want to lose his first game in a Cove, as Cove manager. But then Trittier just after a 5-0 thumping at home. So there's a lot of pressure going on in different parts of the division. So I think there's going to be plenty of 1-1 results this week.
And of course, we've got Europe coming up next week. So will it Rovers in action next Tuesday night? It's live on RT as well, which is great to see. So we'll be covering that in depth on our next show. But look, that's where we're going to wrap it up tonight. It's nice to do a normally lengthy podcast, Carrie, because our last few have been well over the 2-hour mark. But I think we're going to wrap it up at about an hour and a half this week, or slightly over. So I'm quite pleased with that for once.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be able to get the rest of Love Island now.
But look, I felt like crap before we started recording this, but that's really perked me up. I've enjoyed that. Good podcast. So hopefully our listeners have enjoyed it as well, and hopefully you're feeling a bit perked up as well.
Oh no, it's worse. I feel. I know, it's good. Good show. No,
of course we have no games this week, yeah. Which is maybe a blessing. We can rest up. No Town game. They're on the bye week, but I'm going to head to UCD or Dundalk and UCD on Friday. So that thankfully isn't too taxing in terms of travel. So I can take it easy this weekend. And then you going to take in a game yourself?
I haven't decided yet. I think I'm going to go catch the dart down to Bray and Cork. Just to see what's going on down there.
I thought you might go to Pats.
I was thinking of going to Pats, but I've been there a few times lately, so I just want to see, you know, what type of war zone or
mind yourself. You could do like a Ross Kemp, you know, or Danny Dyer, Ireland's most dangerous grounds.
Yeah, something like
I'm outside the ground here, 2 hours before kickoff, keeping the nut down.
Yeah. Jeez, that's a great accent there. Yeah. Oh god. But yeah, no, I just think good to see Cork again, see how they do against a team, you know, that they're expected to beat. So and it's been the last game I was down in Carlisle. Now, I think I swore that I wouldn't go back to the Carlisle this season after Bray nil, Treaty nil. It was horrendous up there and cold, wet, miserable, and there was nothing approaching football on the pitch there. So I think I might be heading there on Friday.
Right. Very good. Well, as I said, look after yourself and put manners on anyone that's misbehaving over there. And look, enjoy the game. But as I said, folks, hopefully you've enjoyed this week's show. For myself, Kieran and Gary, we're going to leave it there. You know the crack by now. You can subscribe to the pod wherever you get your podcasts, likes of Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music. You'll find us on all of those. You can leave a review as well. It's greatly appreciated. Do get in touch with us on social media. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and until next week, we will speak to you soon. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.